Good morning. It's always so good to be here and to worship together with our church family here. We're so blessed by every one of you, all of you who are with us today. It's good to have James back up here leading songs again for the first time in a while. He's had a little short hiatus with some health issues, and glad to see him back up here. To our guests who are with us, we're so grateful that you are with us and you are always encouraged. We pray you would open your Bibles and follow along with the rest of us. Last week, our sermon title was Husbands Act Like Men, and I think I told you I didn't plan on it being a two-parter until later in the week before last Sunday. So today we're going to finish up this lesson looking at husbands and our need to act like men. It comes from 1 Corinthians 16, verses 13 and 14, which says, "Be on the alert, stand firm in the faith, act like men, be strong, all that you do must be done in love." And so we looked in Ephesians 5 last week. We'll look there a little bit more today again, where we read about God's description of the marriage relationship. And we noted at the beginning, God created men and women differently. He created Adam first. He created Eve to be a helpmeet for him. There are intrinsic differences down to the cellular chromosomal level of men and women that are simply different. And so men need to act like men, not like women, right? Now, if you've been watching the news at all, you know, society is not making this any easier on us. Just this week, they had Senate hearings trying to appoint a new Supreme Court justice, and Judge Amy Coney, Judge, who is it? Ketanji Brown Jackson was nominated, and she was asked by a female senator asked the female judge if she could define a woman. Could you provide a definition for the word woman? And this lady who's been appointed to fill one of nine spots as a justice of the United States Supreme Court said, quote, "Can I provide a definition? No, I can't. I can't provide a definition for the word woman." That's quite a statement, isn't it? That's quite a statement. And that question's been asked by a lot of different people lately. There's several man on the street type interviews where you ask someone to define a woman, and people are having a hard time defining what a woman is anymore. It's kind of shocking to me. It reminds me, though, of Romans 1:22, which says, "Professing to be wise, they became fools." And so it shouldn't be as shocking as it is to me, because the Bible tells us people are going to get so confused in their thinking about basic fundamental truths like this. And so what we need to recognize is that our biblical view that God created men and women different, our biblical view is quickly becoming very politically incorrect. That is not a politically correct view to hold any longer in this country. That men and women are inherently different, and that there is a very clear distinction between the two. But that is the truth. That is how God created us. And we have teachings about what it means to be a man and a woman that we need to embrace. So men need to act like men, right? You go back to Ephesians 5, verse 25. "Husbands, love your wives just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for her." So we noted differences between acting like a man and what a man needs versus a woman last week. We also noticed that a man needs to act like Christ. We need to love our wives as Christ loved the church. And so we looked at two distinct images that the Bible gives us of Christ to help us understand our role. One is the sacrificial lamb. And I think we understand the man's role to sacrifice very well. But we also have the image of Christ as a mighty redeemer, right? Who rescues his church, who rescues his bride and protects his bride. And so there's also a time for a husband to act like the mighty warrior redeemer for his family, to protect his family, to protect his husband and or protect his wife and his children's best interest. So this morning we're going to continue looking at how a husband is to act like a man, and that includes acting with love. And so Ephesians 5:33, we noted last week, "Nevertheless, let each one of you in particular so love his own wife as himself, and let the wife see that she respects her husband." So again, God highlights two different distinct needs. He highlights the husband's need for respect, And God highlights the wife's need for love. Again, of course, a wife needs respect also. Of course, a husband needs love also. It's not saying they don't need that. But God is highlighting a specific need for respect for the man and love for the wife. And so it's worth our time looking at that. And again, the young ladies have been studying this downstairs. And so, man, if you feel like I'm picking on you, I am. Sorry, not sorry. That's just what we're doing right now. Stephen did a great job rereading Ephesians 5, verse 25 through 31 for us a few moments ago. We won't reread all of that, but that passage tells us a lot. It gives us a lot of important information to understand the marriage relationship. And so, first, again, we love our wives. Man, we love our wives as Christ loved the church. He gave himself for her, right? We ought to be willing to give ourselves for our wife. Verse 28 says a husband needs to love his wife as his own body. You love her as your own body. Down in verse 31, Paul quotes Genesis 2 and verse 24. It says, "For this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh." This mentality, yes, for men, but also for women, this mentality of you're not two different people, you are one, having that view of your marriage relationship is going to go a long way. Understanding that, yeah, they're different, but they're a part of you. And viewing your spouse as a part of you is going to go a long way in fulfilling your role as a spouse. I want to hone in on verse 29, though. Verse 29 says, "For no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as the Lord does the church." It says you are to nourish and cherish your wife, or your future wife, perhaps, young men. Just as you nourish and cherish your own body, and just as Christ nourishes and cherishes the church. And so that's how we're going to start, as we kind of look at how we're supposed to love our wives today. I want to look back at this passage first from 1 Corinthians 16 and draw a connection between acting like a man, which is exactly what that phrase, that original word in the Greek means, and love. I hope we all see there's a direct connection there, right? Masculinity is not masculinity without love. There's no such thing as genuine biblical masculinity without love being a part of that. And so real men understand how we ought to love others, in particular our wives, if we are married or if we hope to get married one day. And so we have to act like a man by the way we nourish our wives. To nourish means to bring to maturity. At its most basic, it's the idea of providing nourishment. Providing nourishment, it means to feed. And so we support our wife. You can look at the physical aspect of physically providing what your wife needs, and I'd say that's certainly a part of it, but that's not all that we're talking about. We're also talking about the emotional and spiritual support that your wife needs. You need to nourish your wife in such a way to cultivate a home, to cultivate an environment, so your wife can grow in her faith. So that your wife can grow spiritually, and so that you can put your wife in the best position to be pleasing to God in her life. One maybe obvious thing that wives need for this is for their husbands to open up with them, right? They want to be close with you, to feel supported. They need you to open up and to be close with them, possibly, quite possibly more than you feel comfortable opening up to your wife. So we might have to get out of our comfort zone here, men, when we talk with our wives and open up with them. But ladies, I will say, if you want your husband to open up to you, he is much more likely to open up if he knows you respect him. If your husband does not feel respected, good luck getting him to open up to you, because it's probably not going to happen. So the more you respect your husband, the more you're helping him. If you're not respecting him, you're presenting a stumbling block, making it more difficult for him to open up to you. Man, I want us to think about how we support our wife, specifically in the context this morning of our wives' God-given roles and responsibilities. And so keep a bookmark maybe in Ephesians 5. Go over to Titus chapter 2 for just a moment. Titus chapter 2, we got to understand what God requires of our wife so we can support them to be pleasing to God. Titus 2 and verse 5, the younger women are told here to to be discreet, to be chaste, to be homemakers, good, obedient to their own husbands, that the word of God may not be blasphemed. Look back at that again. How popular is that in today's society? How popular is it for young women to be discreet, to be chaste, to be homemakers, to be obedient to their own husbands? Is that the type of woman that feminism in our modern society is promoting and encouraging in our ladies today? Is that how our young ladies are being raised? Is that what's being taught in high schools and colleges and promoted in pop culture? To be discreet, to be chaste, to be homemakers, to be obedient to their own husbands? The world looks down on godly women who act that way, don't they? They look down on that very much. Society is telling our wives they are weak and stupid for following these God-given commands. And an awful lot of people think that your wife is wasting her time if she's being a homemaker the way God has called her to be. So husband, what are you doing to support your wife in that role? What are you doing to support her? Because if you're not going to support her in that, who is? Who else is going to support your wife to be the godly woman God has planned for her, if not you? We better show our wives that we appreciate their desire and their willingness to follow God's plan. We have to show them we're committed to them and go out of our way to fulfill their needs. If we bring this back to Christ, so if I'm supposed to love my wife as Christ loved the church, okay, how did Christ nourish the church? Look over in Matthew chapter 20, Matthew chapter 20, verses 25-28. And think about this, because over in Ephesians 5, we read the husband is the head of the wife, right? And that's true. That's not to take anything away from that. But we need to balance that with what we read here. Jesus called them to himself and said, "You know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and those who are great exercise authority over them, yet it shall not be so among you. But whoever desires to become great among you, let him be your servant. Whoever desires to be first among you, let him be your slave. Just as the Son of Man, just as Christ, did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many." Who did he give his life for? For his bride. To redeem his bride. So, husbands, God does not make you head of the wife to lord it over them, if we can borrow some of the wording here from Matthew 20. Instead, just as Jesus came to serve and give his life, we in marriage, men, we come into marriage to serve and to give of our life every single day. If you don't want to serve, if you don't want to do that, then don't get married. But that's part of it. That's part of marriage. And when you consider Genesis 2 and verse 24 again, when God said that a husband and wife shall become one flesh, don't forget that either. What does that mean? Because in a very real way, by serving your wife, you are actually serving your own best interests. When you serve your wife, you are serving your own best interest. Your wife has the power to give you the respect that God calls her to give, right? Ephesians 5:33. That you cannot in some ways give yourself. You can't give yourself respect the same way your wife gives you respect. And so you have the power to give your wife the love that she needs that she can't get for herself, right? And so when you give your wife the love, the support, the nourishment that she needs, you are giving her the fuel to give you the respect that you need, husbands. Now, I'm not saying that marriage operates on a quid pro quo basis. That's not the point. Don't love your wife just so you can reap the benefits of. That's not the point. That's the wrong mentality to have. That's not going to be a healthy marriage. But it is reality, though, that by you fulfilling your wife's needs and supporting her, she is going to be more equipped to support you and give you the love and respect that you need as well. So we're called to nourish our wives. We're also called to cherish our wives, back in Ephesians 5 and verse 29. The word cherish literally means keep warm. This is kind of a tough one. It's only used one other place in the Bible, in 2 Thessalonians 2 and verse 7, which says Paul says, we were gentle among you, just as a nursing mother cherishes her own children. And so husbands are told to cherish their wives as they cherish their own bodies. The other time we see this is nursing mothers cherish their children. That's not saying, husbands, that you treat your wife like a mother treats her children, right? But it's the idea of tender care. That's how some translations translate 2 Thessalonians 2 and verse 7. You give them tender care. I think of this, cherishing your wife, as you treat her like a treasure. Like an absolute treasure. There's a country song that says, to the world, you may be just another girl. But to me, baby, you are the world, right? That's the idea of cherishing your wife. It's treating her like she is the only woman on the planet. She's the only woman on the planet for you. And so you care for her. You give her the care as if she is the only woman on the planet. Not like, this is a terrible analogy, I'm sorry, not like a car, right? Yeah, we take care of our cars, we get the oil changed, but we know in a few years, we can trade that car in and get another car. We get a newer car, right? I know, it's terrible, I'm sorry. But shouldn't we treat our wives like we're going to keep them forever until our life is done? Would you treat your car a little differently if you knew that's the last car you could ever own? I've got to own this car for the next 20, 30, 40 years, however much time I might have left. You would cherish that car and take such good care of it that you would want it to last that long, right? But we need to treat our wives in such a way that we know this is the last wife I'm ever going to have, Lord willing, right? That's the way we ought to take care of our wives. Proverbs 6:18 says, let your fountain be blessed and rejoice with the wife of your youth. Your wife needs to know she is loved. You need to say, I love you a lot. And not just the words. Find out her love language. Find out how she feels loved and speak it often. Say, I love you in her love language often. So again, if I'm to love like Christ, how does Christ cherish the church? John 3:16, very familiar, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son. Now, yes, there's the sacrifice element of that, but I'm not focusing on the sacrifice part right now. What I want to focus on is the, for God so loved the world that what? That he did something about it. It doesn't say, for God so loved the world, period. Moving on to verse 17. That's not what it says. No, but because God loved the world, he did something to prove his love to us. He proved his love. Look over in Luke chapter 15. Luke chapter 15. The parable of the lost sheep. Let's read verses 4 through 6. What man of you, having 100 sheep, if he loses one of them, does not leave the 99 in the wilderness and go after the one which is lost until he finds it? And when he has found it, he lays it on his shoulders, rejoicing. And when he comes home, he calls together his friends and neighbors, saying to them, rejoice with me, for I have found my sheep which was lost. Again, your wife is the only woman on the world, right? There are no 99 sheep. There's only the one for you. And so you would do anything. You prove that you cherish her as the only woman in the world by leaving everything else behind to go after her. To protect her, to provide for her. Look over in Proverbs 19 for just a moment. Now, if this seems odd at first, I'll give you that. It does. But hear me out. Proverbs 19, verse 13. The contentions of a wife are a continual dripping. Proverbs 21, verse 19. Better to dwell in the wilderness than with a contentious and angry woman. What in the world does it have to do with cherishing your wife, right? First, I'm not making an excuse for contentious women. Some women are just contentious and angry, and that's not okay, but that's just kind of the way it is. But for us as husbands, For us as husbands, could it be possible, if your wife is contentious, or if she's angry about whatever, is it possible that that behavior is at least in part a result of our unloving treatment towards her? Is that possible? I'll shake my head for you. It's very possible. Sometimes a contentious, angry woman is a result. It's just a woman who's not cherished by her husband the way she ought to be. And if a woman doesn't feel cherished, if she doesn't feel like the only woman in the world, she's a lot more likely to be contentious and to be angry. If she's always looking over her shoulder, she's always wondering what you're up to. And so I'm not saying it's an excuse for women to be contentious or angry. But I am definitely saying a husband who does not cherish his wife, you are presenting a stumbling block to your wife. And we ought not do that. How many women who are cherished, how many women who feel, who are treated like the only woman on earth, are contentious and angry? I contend probably not very many. So husbands, don't encourage your wives to be contentious. A contentious woman is not likely to respect her husband. And that gets, remember that book, Love and Respect, I mentioned last week? It mentions the crazy cycle, where a wife without the love she needs reacts in a disrespectful way, and then a husband without the respect he needs reacts in an unloving way, and that just continues until someone puts a stop to it. Husbands, if that cycle sounds familiar at all, it's your place to reverse it. It's your place to turn it around and give your wife the love she needs. Go with me now, if you would, over to 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 7. We're going to look at two more things, two more specific teachings for men to follow as how to love their wife. 1 Peter 3 and verse 7. Husbands, likewise, dwell with them with understanding, giving honor to the wife as to the weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers may not be hindered. And so what we see first here is, husbands, you need to understand your wife. And don't laugh. Don't snicker. Don't laugh. I got to hold it in, right? We're supposed to understand our wives. It's been said, when you understand why a round pizza is cut into triangles and stuffed into a square box, then you begin to understand the nature of women. Have I read that before? Nobody? Okay. It's fine. It takes some effort to understand women. It doesn't come easy. But we have to do it. We have to put forth the effort to try to understand our wives. The word for understanding is used several times in the New Testament. It usually is translated as knowledge. We have to have a knowledge of and about our wives. We have to get to know our wives. That understanding starts by remembering we're different. It starts by remembering you are two different people. Even though you are one flesh, you are two different people, and so your wife is not always going to react the way that you would react. She's not going to think the way that you would think. And so part of this is just kind of getting over that and not expecting her to be an exact replica of you, but a compliment to you. And so don't get frustrated when she reacts differently than how you expect. Don't get frustrated by that. I think that's half the battle. But again, if I'm going to love my wife as Christ loved the church, how does Christ understand the church? Go over to Hebrews. I think we looked at this in class last week. Hebrews chapter 2. Hebrews chapter 2, verses 17 and 18. It says, therefore, in all things, he had to be made like his brethren. Jesus Christ had to be made like his brethren, that he might be a merciful and faithful high priest in things pertaining to God, to make propitiation for the sins of the people. For in that he himself has suffered, being tempted, he is able to aid those who are tempted. Think about the great lengths to which Jesus Christ went to understand his bride, to get to know us, to get to know people and what it was like to live as a human. He learned how to help us, how? By becoming like us, by getting to know us. He endured the same sufferings, the same temptations we face. Why? So that as our faithful high priest, he would be able to help us when we are tempted. We cannot say Jesus doesn't understand. We can't use that as an excuse. None of us can say God doesn't get it. He doesn't understand what it's like to be a human. Yes, he does. He took on flesh. He went through life. He went through all the emotions and trials that we go through. And so the point here, husbands, if Jesus went to such great lengths to understand his bride, we have to put forth the amount of effort necessary to understand our bride. You can't just say, I don't understand. I'll never understand her. I don't get it. We can't do that. So how do we understand our wife? It's really not rocket science. We listen, right? We open up to her. And I want us to consider this. Again, thinking about Jesus and his example. Jesus did not come down here to micromanage our every move. He didn't come down and start barking orders, right? He didn't come down and start bossing people around. He mingled with people. He observed. He saw how they lived. He asked a lot of questions. He attended their weddings. He went fishing with them. Now, he did share God's word with them. I'm not saying that he, he didn't tolerate false doctrine. He didn't compromise. There we go. He didn't compromise the truth. He told people what they needed to do to please God. So he wasn't wishy-washy on that at all. However, if people didn't listen, Jesus never forced them to listen. He never, ever forced someone to listen. He didn't grab someone and throw them in the water to baptize them, right? That's not what he was about. He never took away another person's free will to choose. And so, husband, you have no right, you have no ability to take away your wife's ability to make choices, good or bad. You can't take away their ability to make choices, right? You're not a CEO of some corporation who can fire your wife if she's not doing your job. That's not the way that relationship works. And so sometimes this means just listening. Just listening. Yes, we want to help. Of course, if you can help, help. But sometimes it means just listening without trying to fix everything. And that's a really hard thing for some husbands to do, is listen without just trying to fix all of her problems. God doesn't call us to fix our spouse. Help, support, encourage, absolutely. But our idea of fixing our spouse often means making them act like us. And again, we're different. Your wife is not you. Now, if you think about what did God say to the wise in 1 Peter 3 and verse 1, that they might win their husbands, they might win their husbands if their husbands were unfaithful, by what? By respecting their husband, by loving them, and by their example. And so a wife's example has the power to potentially change her husband, to fix her husband, right? That principle holds true for husbands. It's not our job to fix our spouse. It's our job to fix ourselves. And by fixing ourselves, wives, by respecting your husbands, husbands, by loving your wives, you then offer your spouse the motivation, the invitation, really, to give you the love or respect you need in return. So we need to understand our wives, gentlemen, and finally, we need to honor your wife. You need to honor your wife. It's very similar to cherishing, because it's the idea of valuing again. But it's understanding that your wife is worthy of you. Not putting yourself above her, right? She is absolutely worthy of every bit of you. She's worthy of your sacrifice. She's worth fighting for, to protect and defend. It is similar to respect in some way. This is the respect that a wife needs, is for you to honor her, to show her her worth. Now, we get hung up sometimes on that phrase, as to the weaker vessel, right? Giving honor to the wife as to the weaker vessel, over in 1 Peter 3 and verse 7. What does that mean? First, it's not talking about physical strength, because it goes on to say, you know, you're heirs of God's grace. We're talking about spiritual, but it also doesn't mean that your wife is weaker spiritually. That's not what it's saying. It means you treat your wife delicately. Not because she is weak or more fragile, but because of how much you value her soul. The Proverbs have a lot to tell us about the honor that is owed to a godly wife. Proverbs 18:22, he who finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favor from the Lord. You honor that good thing you've been given. Proverbs 12 and verse 4 starts, an excellent wife is the crown of her husband. Proverbs 31:10, who can find a virtuous wife? For her worth is far above rubies. Man, it might be a good idea to write these verses down somewhere and read over them every day for a while, as a reminder of how much honor your wife is bestowed, ought to be bestowed. Next time you start to get frustrated, remember the honor that she is due. A few years ago when I was teaching, I had the opportunity for Mario Andretti's daughter, Barbie, I believe it was, to come to the classroom by around Indy 500 time, and she spoke with the students, and afterwards, we got to go outside by the playground in the bus parking lot. She had a brand new Chevy Camaro Indianapolis 500 pace car. And I'm not really a huge, I like cars. I'm not a huge car guy. This thing was awesome. It was so cool. And Miss Andretti asked me if I wanted to drive the car, take the car for a spin. And I kind of froze. Because, yeah, I want to drive that thing. And when an Andretti offers you the keys to a car, you don't say no to that, right? You don't say no to that. Now, my dad will attest to this. I mean, no disrespect to grandmas, but I drive like a grandma. Just, that's my nature behind the wheel. And so I took this car to the end of the bus lot. And for me, going, I got to like 30 miles an hour in the bus lot. And that felt like, you know, pretty fast in that thing. And I just took it around in a circle and came back, and she expected me to go farther. She asked if I would take it down the road. I said, no, I'm good. I'm really good. Now listen, that Camaro was no weak vessel by any means. It makes our hamster car out there seem like a hamster car, right? It's no weak vessel. But I treated that car like it was made of glass. Why? Because I honored the car. Because I was honored to get a chance to get behind the wheel of an Andretti car. And I was scared to death I was going to break something or wreck it or cause a dent or whatever. And I didn't want to take any chances of putting a scratch or a ding on that car. I wanted to present that car back to Miss Andretti without any spot or blemish. And I realized that's two car examples in a sermon about husbands loving their wives. Again, I'm sorry. I don't know. But if we go back again one more time. Okay, so how does Christ love the church? How does Christ honor the church? Well, very simply, if you go over to 1 Peter 1, verse 18 and 19, knowing that you were not redeemed with corruptible things like silver or gold, from your aimless conduct received by tradition from your fathers, but with the precious blood of Christ, as of a lamb without blemish and without spot. Christ values you so much, he said you're worth his life. He values you more than gold or silver. And so we need not forget, gentlemen, he values your wife. Jesus Christ values your wife more than gold or silver. Jesus honors your wife enough to give his life for her. So if you go back to 1 Peter 3 and verse 7, giving honor to the wife as to the weaker vessel and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers may not be hindered. Heirs together the grace of life. Husbands, you honor your wife when you value her soul. When you value her eternal soul. Husbands, you are the protector and provider for a possession of Jesus Christ. If he died for your wife, if she belongs to him, you're protecting one of God's own possessions. Don't ever forget what the entire purpose of life is. That's to love God, right? to prepare for eternity with him. And so when your wife's life is over, when her life is over, and God receives her, men, it ought to be our aim that as much as depends on us, our wife is given back to God without any spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that she should be holy and without blemish. So husbands ought to love their own wives. Your primary goal in marriage, your shared goal with your wife, is to be pleasing to God and to reach heaven with her one day. It's a far greater goal than anything else you can accomplish. Pay off your mortgage early, great. Help pay for your kids' college, get them into college, get a bigger house, whatever. That's awesome. Go for it. But none of that should trump your goal of you and your spouse getting to heaven. And if you have children, getting your children to heaven at whatever price you have to pay. All the silver and the gold in the world is not worth your wife's soul, your children's soul, or your soul. And so husbands, the number one way you honor your wife is by doing everything you possibly can. Exhaust all of your resources. You leave everything. There is no other 99. There's only the one sheep. And you go after her. And encourage her to love God and be faithful to him. And live in such a way that is consistent with your mutual inheritance of his grace. You are heirs together of the grace of life. Are you living that way? So husbands, we need to act like men. The world desperately, desperately needs husbands to act like men. But more important than the world, your wife needs you to act like a man. Your future wife needs you to act like a man. Your children, your future children, need you to act like a man. You love your wife by nourishing her, cherishing her, offering her understanding, and giving her honor. So I'll close by asking, are you an heir of grace this morning? Are you an heir of grace? If you've not yet received the gift of eternal life through obedience to the gospel, being baptized, if you've been negligent with God's gift of grace that he's given you, we would encourage you to make that right in whatever way we can help you. If we can help, let us know. You can do so after services if you want, or you can let us know right now as we stand and as we sing.